Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
All right, welcome to another podcast interview with the Redefine blog. Our guest today is State Representative Richard Corcoran from Newport Richey, Florida. Representative Corcoran was elected in 2010. He is in line to be House Speaker in 2016, and this year he was the lead sponsor of House Bill 859, which expands Florida's tax credit scholarship for low-income students. The bill passed both the House and the Senate last week, and it's now awaiting the signature of Governor Rick Scott. So, Representative Corcoran, thanks so much for giving us some of your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Ron.
Well, just so our listeners know, your bill increases the cap on how much corporations can donate to the scholarship program. And I want to get to that in a minute. But the thing that may have gotten the most attention within the school choice community was the part that dealt with the FCAT. And for listeners who don't know what that is, the FCAT is the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test, which is our state's main standardized test. So can you quickly describe that part of the bill and tell our listeners why you wanted that provision in there?
Yeah, well, it was really about fairness. Right now, if you're a homeschool student, you're eligible to take the FCAT. If you're a public school student, you take the FCAT. But if you're a private school student, you cannot take the FCAT. And so my kids, coming from a private school, homeschool background, one of the things that was disconcerting to us is we were not eligible to take it when we were in private school. And the secondary issue is when you talk to some of these private schools, a lot of them are losing enrollment during these difficult economic times because parents are trying to cut. They have to cut somewhere with their salaries being so devastated. And one of the things they're doing is they're pulling their kids out of private school and putting them in public school. And they're saying to us, you know, these private schools, well, you know, we really like the Christian aspect or the parochial aspect, but the education, academic stuff, we don't know is much different, so we're going to do this. And I think one of these things the private schools would like is to be able to say, no, if you look at our scores on the FCAT versus your scores on the FCAT, there's a tremendous difference, and hopefully that will increase enrollment, not decrease it. And so I think there was a little bit of consternation about it, but really the consternation was a fear of something that could happen years down the road, not anything in the language in the bill. The bill itself was completely permissive. If you're a private school and you do not want to take the FCAT, you do not have to. If you're a private school and you voluntarily want to, you can. And so I think we've made it a lot more fair for private schools to have those opportunities available to them that already exist for public schools and homeschool students.
Okay, well, let me get to that criticism real quick. Now, I think it's fair to say that even though it's your provision there was voluntary, that not everybody was happy with it, and there were some folks in the choice community who thought that it would, and I hope I'm characterizing their position right, but they thought it would open the door to the state mandating the FCAT for private schools. So what do you think about that concern?
Well, you know, if you go back and look, those concerns always exist, but I'd have to go back, Ron, and look. But when we had homeschool students and the homeschool movement, which really took flight in the late 80s and early 90s, they didn't take the FCAT initially either. And I think at some point in there, we allowed homeschool students to be able to drive their children to the testing center, whatever school was nearby, and take the FCAT. We did that years and years and years ago, and nobody has mandated that all homeschool students take the FCAT. I don't think it's a fear that's realized in any kind of historical accurate with any kind of historical accuracy in what has transpired.
Okay, so you don't think in this case it would have opened the door to some kind of mandate farther down the road either?
No.
Okay.
I know if that's going to happen, it's going to happen regardless of whether or not this piece of legislation passed or failed.
Okay. Well, now here's the question I heard often as a reporter from completely on the other side of the debate, which is, why not make it mandatory? Why not make all tax credit scholarship students take the FCAT? So what do you think of that argument? Why not make it mandatory and get that issue off the table?
Well, I mean, what we're dealing with is private enterprise. We're dealing with private schools who should not have to have big government come in and dictate to them the terms of how they educate or how they run their business. Nobody believes in that. And the reality is what they really are crying for isn't necessarily those schools take the FCAT, but it was kind of an amazing process to watch the questions that would materialize throughout the bill's movement through the process, and that is, the overwhelming number one question was, why don't we make these private schools have measurements? And the reality is they do. Statutorily, they're required to take a standardized test every single year. That standardized test is then measured and compared to the results of the standardized test in the public school system, and we're able to say whether the students on this corporate tax scholarship program are doing better or worse than the students that they're being compared to in the public schools or otherwise. And so the measurement exists, and it's a rigorous measurement, and it's a measurement that we can make valuations and improvements based on those measurements. And so but the reality of government coming in and saying to these private institutions, this is how you're going to run your private company, I don't think that anyone really believes that's ever going to end up in a good situation.
Okay. Representative Corcoran, let me switch gears on you slightly and get to the cap. Now, because of the law that passed in 2010, the cap next year was already going to grow from $175 million to right at, or pretty close to, $219 million. So why did you want to go up even more than that to $229
million? Well, the reality is that the program is so successful. And keep in mind, this is a program that deals with roughly 75% of minority students are the ones on the program. 60% of the children on the program are from single-parent homes. And so what happens is that you have a word of mouth that just permeates into the communities and say, hey, listen, you can get this corporate tax scholarship, and you can send your kid to this school, and they're going to do a lot better and have a lot greater result. And so what happens is, when that takes place, which it has over the years, given the great success in the program, we now have 13,000 kids on the waiting list that we can't even service, and we're dealing with the most academically at-risk students. And so to the extent that we had some extra money that we could bump up the cap, and now we can take an additional over 2,000 students off that waiting list, that's a great opportunity, not just for these students and not just for these families, but also for the educational environment of the state of Florida. When we pull those kids out of the public school, we're pulling the lowest performing students academically out of the public school system. We're not, you know, one of the things that people always say, oh, you're skimming the cream from the top. We're not. What you're doing in this program is you're taking the worst performers, and by doing so, you're elevating the performance of that public school that these students are coming from, in addition to giving these students a better academic education. It's a win-win for everybody.
Okay. I'd like to just interject something real quick here for our listeners, especially for those who are outside of Florida. The tax credit scholarship program in Florida has won a fair amount of bipartisan support in recent years. In 2010, nearly half of the Democrats in the legislature supported expansion of the program, and this year that fell off a little bit. I think it's fair to say the Democratic support slipped to about one third of Democrats. So, can you give me your assessment of what happened? I mean, why was there a little bit of a drop off this year in Democratic support?
I don't know that it was necessarily anything related to the program or the scholarship itself. I think that most of the debates that we've been having over the last 4 or 5 years have been budget-related. In fact, during the budget, when we passed it, I think over the last 11 or 12 years, the budget has passed bipartisanly 6 of the 10 years, give or take. The 4 years where it was completely not bipartisan were all in the last 5. And so there's two elements. One is you have a difficult budgetary times that have kicked in those last 5 years. And so people are just much more conscientious of how they vote on anything that spends a dollar. The critical analysis is, should we put the money here or should we put the money there? And I think that you have some established folks in the Democratic Party who would like to see, during these difficult economic times, every single dollar that we have while we're in a cutting mode go to strictly to public education. And one of the arguments that we've made on this program for them that we really need to get that message out is that every dollar we spend on this program produces $1.44 more available that you could use in the public education system, not less. It's a positive fiscal impact to the entire educational system and the budget itself.
So if I'm hearing you right, then you don't think it was concerned so much about the program, it was concerned about this perception that it's costing money, and here we are in a tight budget year yet again.
Yeah, the expenditures, you are expending money in this program, but you're decreasing your cost, so it's a net positive for the program. But for those folks in the budget area, that's the number one concern. And you see that also in the overall budget. The overall budget, in years past, we had much more Democratic support for the overall budget. Now we have less. And it's all because of this difficult economic times that we found ourselves in over the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Well, that budget argument or budget concern ties in with another argument that I think was floating around out there, and that was the greed argument. And, you know, there were some rumblings that some folks thought supporters of the program were being quote unquote greedy because, you know, again, the program did get this big expansion a couple years ago, and here supporters were again asking for more. You know, how much was this greed argument an undercurrent in the debate, and what did you think of that argument?
Well, I think that what we have to focus on in government is what we focus on in the private sector, and that is we should be much more conscientious and in full pursuit of excellent outcomes, and not so much of the process that drives those excellent outcomes. And so, in saying that, my argument would be twofold. One is they're wrong; it's a positive fiscal impact. But even if it costs us money to have a higher graduation rate among these students, to have greater scores on English and math, whatever those outcomes are, if we can achieve them and it costs an extra dollar to achieve them, hypothetically, then we should always pursue that. That's the goal in education, is to have everyone graduate, everyone on grade level, everyone hopefully having the skills necessary to go to the next level, whether it be academically or some sort of vocational training. And this concept that we should be pulling out of a program or not spending more money in a program because it's greedy, and the program deals with 75% minority students, 60% have a single mom, all of them are on average 12% above the poverty level. Their academic improvement goes up, not down, but they're taking the worst from the public school educational system. The public school has more money available to it, not less, and the schools that these are around, these corporate tax scholarships, public schools do better academically, not worse. So if you have a bill that does all of those things, the last thing you should be allowing or indulging is some sort of emotional argument that there's a greed aspect to it. The outcomes speak for itself, just not only for the corporate tax scholarship students, but also for the public school in that environment.
Okay. All right. One last question, and thanks for your patience with me. And this one's on a completely different subject. So the parent trigger, obviously a big deal of an issue in Florida and nationally. And I bring this up because outside Florida, the parent trigger bill actually has some Democratic roots and some Democratic support. And yet when it came to Florida, it became part of the right-wing conspiracy. So why did that happen, and why would you, a rock-solid Republican, support something that, at least outside Florida, has some Democratic roots?
Yeah, one of the things that, and you've probably seen it a lot, Ron, from covering Tallahassee, is things get labeled Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative. I think that it's incumbent upon all legislators to look at the public policy, evaluate it, and make a determination based on their set of principles that they, or the grid that they go through with all their legislation, and make a determination whether it's good or bad public policy. I don't get into the whole, this person supports it, this person's against. I do believe that parent trigger, it's an excellent piece of legislation. I think it'll come back. It will pass. I think the lesson in it is sometimes when you have a piece of legislation, sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get the public perception to understand what it does. And in this case, it wasn't even so much the public as it was getting lawmakers to understand why is it a problematic piece of legislation when you're giving parents, which we all say is the most crucial thing to the child's success in education, more power over the child's education if they're stuck in a school that's been failing for 2 consecutive years, or they have an ineffective teacher for at least 2 consecutive years. Why is that bad to give that child and the parents of that those children, the opportunity to make a change if the system's not? And that's all the bill did. And I think in time, over this course of the summer and into the fall of next session, I'd be shocked if parent trigger doesn't pass next year in the next legislative session, and I'd be shocked if it doesn't pass with bipartisan support.
Okay. Well, on that note, thanks very much. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Any other final words?
No, I appreciate the interview, and it's always great to work with the organization. You guys do a fantastic job for the state of Florida, and speaking on behalf of myself and the colleagues, both Republican and Democrat, who support this legislation, we appreciate all your efforts.
Well, thanks very much for saying that. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate you taking some time out for us. Representative Corcoran, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
Okay.